Coming up on Tech News Today, we'll tell you, should you get the Xbox One? Also, Chromecast is about to bust out and cell phone calls coming to planes. Good? Bad? We'll tell you that too, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, November 22nd, 2013, Xbox One Day. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT11. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zachter.
I'm Jason Howell.
Sarah Land has the day off, but we've got Darren Kitchen and Len Peralta on the show today, so we've got a full house. We're ready to bring you the tech news, starting with the top 10 of the day. The news fuse. Wah. See, I used to think that was actually Sarah saying wah when we ran it before, but wah. Now that she's not here, I know that that's not her. Microsoft launched the Xbox One by taking over Times Square in the entire West End of London, it seemed like, as well as other launch events all around the world. In a further example of their different focus, Microsoft gave fans the entertainment of Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, while when Sony had their launch event, they were more about news about games and such. But showing that they have common ground, the Xbox One already comes with reports of a buggy disk drive and Xbox Live outages, just like Sony's flashing blue light and PlayStation Network outage. Let the console wars begin.
In the Apple versus Samsung damages retrial case, the jury ruled that Samsung owes Apple $290 million more than the previous judgment. Now, originally, Samsung owed Apple $1 billion, but that number was cut down to $640 million due to a miscalculation by the jury. All in all, Samsung now owes Apple about $930 million for patent infringement. Now, of course, Samsung said it's going to appeal. So this case will never, ever, ever end until it does.
One Yay-ish. Day. Yay-ish. Now that you can use electronic devices on takeoff and landing in most U.S. and European flights, it's time to push forward. The FCC is considering a proposal to allow cell phone calls to be placed while above 10,000 feet. They almost proposed this before, but stopped because of all the shouting. Even if the FCC does approve of this, the FAA and the airlines themselves would all have to sign off on it before it became allowed.
Dropbox revamped its iOS app. Version 3.0 brings an updated look that matches iOS 7 a bit better. It's a lot more flat. On the functional side, Dropbox added in AirDrop support so you can send files to other iOS devices over Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Dropbox also says it's revamped its PDF viewer.
AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile have all agreed to stop billing U.S. customers for spam texts used in a practice that's often called cramming. Move comes after an effort of 45 states' attorneys general, led by Vermont's William Sorrell. Verizon says it's in the process of winding down its premium text messaging service, but is keeping it running for the purposes of charities and political campaign donations.
Google is going to hold a two-day hackathon in Mountain View to let developers get a handle on the Cast SDK for Chromecast. Google invited developers from Aircast and CyanogenMod to the event. The Android Chromecast app also got an update that makes it easier to handle troubleshooting.
In an effort to encourage people to learn to code, Wolfram Research announced it's partnering with the Raspberry Pi Foundation to include copies of Mathematica and an early version of Wolfram Language on every Raspberry Pi at no extra charge. Base model of the Raspberry Pi costs you only $25. Those who already own a Raspberry Pi can download the software starting today at raspberrypi.org.
That is freaking awesome. Mozilla released its 2012 annual financial report. Now, revenue for the year was $311 million. Compared to $163 million back in 2011, 90% of Mozilla's 2012 revenue came from Google. Now, Google and Mozilla's deal continues until 2014.
One common criticism of the United States Digital Millennium Copyright Act is that it can be abused to censor speech since bringing the abusers to court is both costly and complicated. Well, WordPress's parent company, Automattic, is helping to end that part of the problem. Joining two lawsuits in federal court alleging false infringement accusations, WordPress is fighting two cases as a friend of the court. One, Retraction Watch, is fighting a disgruntled scientist who copied part of the Retraction Watch website, then claimed it as his own and sent a DMCA takedown request against it. Another involves a journalist who published a press release from Straight Pride UK, which then sent a DMCA notice to WordPress to take down the post.
Love the phrase, disgruntled scientist. Better than mad scientist. New Jersey.
Not mad yet.
New Jersey is testing online gambling. The system would require people to be within the state to play using geolocation. Now, according to the Associated Press, people testing the system have found it troublesome since the geolocation function doesn't work properly. New Jersey is expected to fully launch online gambling next week with 14 websites.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by a website, Squarespace.com. It's not just a website. It's all of your websites. It's your website's beautified. It's your website's adapted to every screen in the universe that's used by humans, at least. They have adaptive designs. They've got beautiful templates. What more could you want? How about reliable hosting in 24 hours, 7 days a week, custom email support? That's right. You can get Squarespace right now without even giving them your credit card number. Their code is beautiful. They're search engine optimized. Hosting is included. I really can't think of a reason not to try Squarespace, honestly. If you don't want a beautiful site, you don't want it to be reliably hosted, and you don't care that it looks good on phones, tablets, desktops, and laptops, then maybe. But I'm not sure there's anybody like that. So come on. You're even thinking about doing a website. Go to squarespace.com. Get it set up now. You got a current blog on another service. Import it over there. During the free trial, you can import it over there and see what it looks like. Put it in one of those templates, customize it a little bit. You can get underneath, do the code if you want or not. Just give it a shot. And you don't have to give them a credit card to start the trial. Just an email address. That's it. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT11 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. We use Squarespace. I use Squarespace. I got two of my sites on it, TomMerrittBooks.com and SwordAndLaser.com, if you want a couple examples. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, it's Friday, and even without Sarah Lane, very happy to have Darren Kitchen from Hack 5 on the show. Good to have you on it. We're getting a run of Fridays going again. It's good,
yes,
good to have you back.
I'm feeling good, and I'm keeping up the Liquid Friday, so stay hydrated.
Me too. Lots of water.
Mm. Yep. Mineral tasty, water.
Tasty.
With apple no water. Vodka in it whatsoever.
That water all around. Water's for everyone. Len Peralta's with us as well to illustrate the story today. You got a water, Len? You drink it?
I do have a water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. We're getting crazy in this piece.
Woo!
Mm. Over distilled vodka is what that is.
Water.
Hydrated show on the internet. We don't say that. We don't say that lightly here. Let's start off talking about the Xbox One launch. A week ago, we were talking about the PlayStation 4 launch. Microsoft had a big old launch event as well. Didn't seem to generate as much news as the PS4 one does, but usually these launch events don't. It's not what you expect them for. They took over Times Square. There's a bunch of great pictures of them with the banners everywhere and Macklemore playing and Ryan Lewis was there. What you would expect with any launch is the bugs, right? We had them with the PS4. We've got them with the Xbox One. Windows Azure, Microsoft's cloud service, was affected by DNS issues outside of the network yesterday, according to Microsoft. This is just bad timing. Something happened that was out of Microsoft's control that affected them. At least that's what they say. It started in north central U.S., then spread. And so that affected Xbox Live. And, of course, it was complicated by the fact that you have all these Xbox Ones coming online at midnight, right? That's not going to help. So you may see issues with that. You may not. They may have them resolved by the time you launch up your Xbox One, if you've got one coming today, like myself. There's also forum reports out there of clicking or grinding when inserting the optical discs into the drive, and then the drive fails to read. It either spits it back out or it just stops. That's to be expected. You're going to have some. Microsoft says it's sporadic. There's not that many reports. So, you know, this is not a big problem. Same thing Sony said about the blinking blue light thing. It's really bad if it happens to you, but it may not be that common. And Xbox had a games montage hinting at a bunch of the coming games, that, you know, like Titanfall and all that. It's a great montage if you want to see all the trailers of all the upcoming games that are exclusive to Xbox. Some of them aren't. There's Elder Scrolls Online's coming to Xbox. It's coming to PC too, but you can see that on there as well. So now we have them all. The Wii U, the Xbox One, and the PS4. Darren Kitchen, you've been playing the PS4, I know. Is that your choice, or are you possibly could be swayed into an Xbox One? Do you have an Xbox One coming? Where do you stand on this whole thing?
Okay, so I'm actually, and as sad as I am to admit it, the perfect example of a casual gamer. You know, I had my glory days with Unreal Tournament. Now, you know, I have to make time for gaming. And so for me, like, and I'm not even like hardcore into all of the news on it. I actually get most of it here. And my conception of the whole lot has just been like, oh, the Xbox sounds really cool if you're into like media. And if you want to play some games, I think they're on the PlayStation because that's got the word play right in it. It's like, and so the other thing for me was the price and the fact that I could actually buy a PS4. I don't know if I even can. We were talking to somebody at GameStop, and they're like, oh, yeah, come back in January. And it's like, oh, all right, you know, I just kind of want to play a game right now. I'm on the PS4 camp right now just because I don't care too much about the other stuff that it brings to the table. I am excited if they have a games montage. This is the first time that we've been talking about the Xbox One playing games, so that sounds pretty cool. Not so good on the clicking, though. Maybe they should have gotten discless. And then just upset everyone.
Yeah, right.
Like that original rumor that everything would be downloaded to these next generation consoles. Yeah, that would have been
interesting. No, diskless. Well, maybe diskless, but with an SD card slot. I mean, come on, SD cards are pretty cheap these days.
That'd be interesting to do that. I think, isn't that how the Nintendo 3DS kind of works? Kind of a modified SD card.
Ooh, or like a cartridge, and then you could be like...
That would totally
Sony memory stick.
That'll absolutely be Nintendo's next innovation, the cartridge-based system again. But yeah, I think I'm in the Xbox camp myself right now. I'm now when it comes to gaming, I have been out of the market for a while. I've used my PS3 pretty much as a Blu-ray player, a media console, and Sony ripped those things out of the PS4, and that kind of irritated me as a media guy. And the thing is, when I want to play games, because the latest generation of games has me really interested, the Kinect features, I thought the Kinect was pretty cool on 360, but this new version of it looks really good. The idea that it can track all these, the fitness aspect to me is kind of ridiculous, and I enjoy that concept to do that, to make it competitive. But for other things, it just seems like it could get me more interested in general, because it's kind of the more futuristic device where I get to talk to it, assuming it works. We've heard reports it doesn't work exactly all the time. But I think the Xbox One has got the best potential because Microsoft's pretty much all about the media, and that's really what I like, plus the gaming versus gaming first and, oh, yeah, media stuff? It'll come in a firmware update. One day we're looking into MP3 playback at Sony.
Well, there is no MP3 playback on the Xbox One at launch. Let me speak for the Sony fanboys that are yelling at you right now.
Thank you.
There is voice recognition on the PS4. In fact, I accidentally activated it yesterday. It works pretty well. It's just... not very pervasive. There's only certain menu situations you can use it in on the PS4, but it's got it, and that's going to get better. So and the PS4 has Netflix, it has Hulu Plus, it has Amazon. What are these media features that the Xbox has that you're saying Sony ripped out of the PS4?
Well, the DLNA features. I think that's kind of coming again to Xbox One. There's a little bit of weirdness when it comes to that, but it's the other media features such as the integration with set-top boxes, or they're sort of integrated, right? The idea of having the HDMI pass-through, that yes, Google TV had that, and that also intrigued me when Google TV had that as an option. But the DLNA feature is one of the reasons I use my PS3 so often. But I guess I'm intrigued by just all of the media offerings. I know that sounds like sacrilege when it comes to the Xbox One, because you know it's all about gaming with these consoles, but I think gaming is secondary on that, and that's kind of how I game. It's
that's
the
sad.
Other thing I do. Is it?
Well, it is, and the consoles have been holding back gaming for the entire gaming in general for the whole last generation, because all of the developers, you know, go for the consoles first because they've got the larger market share and they've got such gimped processors and video cards and such. Well, the PC keeps paving away on that front, and yet it's still so, you know, it's still held back by that. So I was hoping that this new generation would at least kind of like take us up the next milestone. And I've only been playing Killzone on the PS4, but I'm not all that impressed. If I was serious about gaming right now, I'd be just, you know, building a PC, because all the best titles are on there, all the best controls are on there, and it's been easier now than ever to hook one up to your massive TV anyway. So that's my two cents.
I think,
and
honestly,
it plays Netflix.
That's probably my best advice too. Yeah. Because the advice on game consoles, if you don't have a dog in the fight yet, if you're like, I'm not sure which one to get, don't get one. Wait. Yep. Wait and see what happens. Wait until the bugs are shaken out. Wait until they update the firmware a couple of times and see what happens. Because I agree with Derek. The best gaming machines out there right now are PCs. They're just more flexible. The consoles have had some good advantages over PC at a certain stretch, but I think PC gaming is stronger than it's ever been right now.
Agreed.
Chromecast is getting stronger, too. We mentioned yesterday HBO Go coming to it. Now there's a update to the developer's kit, I guess.
Yeah, so Google's inviting developers to its headquarters, giving them a preview of the SDK for Chromecast. It's called Cast SDK. It's available now as a developer preview, and they're going to hold a two-day hackathon over at Mountain View to show how developers can add their works to a list of compatible apps. There's been an SDK right now, and there have been applications made. I think somebody actually made a Kinect controller for the Chrome, but it's not widely available because Google just doesn't allow it just yet. The event's going to happen on December 7th and 8th. Anyone can register for the event, but priority is being given to those developers who have experience with the preview version of the SDK. There's also online documentation of the Cast SDK. Darren, what do you want to see come out of the hackathon? Do you want to see more video support, gaming, productivity? Because the Chromecast pretty much will let you send anything from your phone or your Chrome browser to the device. What do you want to see out of it?
I've been playing with the Chromecast a lot in the last week, and I absolutely love it. This is, you know, basically when you take something that's affordable and hackable that has the potential to bring value, like people are going to swarm to it. And I think that it's an awesome platform. I would love to see more standardization. I would actually really like to see an iPhone app for it so that, you know, you can get the rest of the ecosystem involved as well. You know, I would just love there to be a standardized way across the whole marketplace to be able to just kind of fling or whatever your content to that bigger screen. And I feel like the Chromecast is just, you know, has the capability to you know, we were just talking about consoles. Well, there's some epic games on Android right now, and if you could just play them on your TV and your phone becomes your controller, well, then you got your console in your pocket. I would love to see that, you know, because I feel like this is the more consumer-friendly solution than any of the other stuff that I've seen out there, like MHL cables or Share Display, Smart Link, or whatever it is. And yeah, so I'm very excited to see what kind of standardization and gaming would be cool.
I want to come at this story from two different perspectives. One perspective is, okay, normally these kind of set-top boxes, let's take the Apple TV, even the Roku to a certain extent, are very locked down. And you have to really do a lot of work and a lot of negotiations to get your app on there. It's not impossible. Roku's not actually all that hard, but it's not just a free-for-all, right? It's not like XBMC where anybody can come up with an app for it. And so Google doing this hackathon is a great way to bring developers in and get them into the tent. The other side is the XBMC side where it's like, why should I have to come to your event? Why should I have to have you shepherd me through? Just give me the SDK and let me go to town. Let's open it up and we'll get all kinds of great apps. It's a change for Google to operate in this way. Whereas in the Android versus iOS world, they're the champions of open, right? We let anybody do an Android app. That's all fine. With Chromecast, and I think this is why you're able to get Hulu Plus and HBO Go to agree to play in your sandbox, they're being a lot more controlling, a lot more locked down about what they're going to allow on this thing in the end.
Yeah, I think it's kind of also interesting that Google is going ahead with app development for Cast SDK or the Chromecast because they do still have, well, Google TV, which is now Android TV. So there's that venue for developers. But if they're going to have Cast SDK, it's so much more reliant on another device. I'm just curious what other applications we're going to get out of it. I know people have talked about Plex having the ability to use this one day, because I think that was one of the first launch partners that was rumored anyway. But I don't think that actually came out. But I'm actually very curious about the gaming side on this one, because casual gamers, if you're going to hook it up to your TV and show off, that might be the way to do it. Because, I mean, we've shown on know-how to hook up a S3 to a TV with an MHL cable and all these weird little tricks you've got to use. But it'd be really nice if you can just have, I guess, native mirroring. I know that sounds a little silly, but that kind of thing.
No, but that's all it is. Ultimately, the most valuable thing that this brings is just the potential for wireless HDMI, or the ability to make this screen on that screen. And I know that there are a bunch of competing wireless HDMI standards, but I mean, essentially, like, all of those kind of nullify the Rokus and the Google TVs and even those like inexpensive Android consoles, because what you don't want is another box on your TV. What you want is, well, hey, if you can get all of your content here, you just want it over there, whether it's a game or a movie or whatever have you. I feel like that's the true value, and you're more likely to upgrade your phone as, say, as a gaming device or a media device than you are like another Roku.
Yeah, that's the best part of like any movie or television show I watch. Is like, send it to my screen. I'm like, how? How do you do that? That's what Chromecast is supposed to do. So I want to see a lot of that. Send it to my screen, right there.
Yeah, and open send it to my screen. Not, oh, you can't send that one to your screen. That's the part I don't like. The FCC is going to consider proposing, okay, just before you lose your hat over this, or your head, your hat, either one, your head and your hat, they go together. Before you lose your head over this story, remember that this is the FCC saying we are considering proposing, okay? It's not making a change yet. Allowing cell phone calls on flights over 10,000 feet. Now, also remember, as I emphasized in the news fuse, if the FCC does go ahead and say, we've considered proposing, and now we actually are proposing, the FAA has to weigh in on the equipment that would be used to transmit the calls. And the airlines could say, great, it's allowed, but we're not gonna allow it. The airlines can be the final call on all of this. But they are considering it. And this is a proposal they considered once before in 2007. Workers in the airlines actually objected at that point and said it'd be too much noise. There was also a lack of technical information about how it would work at that time. That's less of an objection already. But people are already up in arms. There's a petition up at whitehouse.gov right now saying, don't do this. Darren Kitchen, when you're on a flight. And remember, we had phones on flights in the past. In the 90s, there were those seatback phones. When you're on a flight, do you want people to be able to use their cell phones to make calls?
Well, there's two different – we're talking about two different things here. Now, on the social issue, when you're saying, do I want to sit next to somebody that's yapping on their phone? The answer is no. Everyone agrees that that's no, unless you're that person that wants to be yapping. In which case, you're probably also upset if somebody else is. But anyway, that's our society. This petition kind of drives me crazy because it has nothing to do with the FCC and more to do with that social impact, which, again, you bring up the ultimate point is that even if the FCC goes through all of this, it's still up to the airlines to decide whether or not they're going to do it. And so I say, like, okay, FCC, this is what you do. Do what you do, which is to, like, oh, well, you're talking about air equipment and ground equipment. We can certify these spectrum, and that's hooray. FCC, do your job. That's cool. Airlines, do your job and make sure that you have a pleasurable experience on your aircraft. And if you don't, that's fine, because I won't fly you anymore. And then, you know, you could have the airline of yappers and then the quiet airline, and I'll be on the quiet skies.
Fly the quiet skies of Kitchen Airlines.
The initial gut reaction is like, no, this will be horrible. Everyone will allow it. It's going to turn into like the bus, because everybody can talk on their phones and that's going to cause all kinds of issues. But if it was allowed, I don't know how many people would take advantage of it, because you're stuck on a giant metal tube for several hours. I don't think you want to irritate the people next to you all the time.
It's not going to be free either. Right. Let's just guess that right now.
Oh, yeah. It's
right?
Probably going to be a special service because it's being converted to VoIP, and maybe you have to use a special app because it's got to receive a cell signal in the air. I think it was GoGo. They're doing the text and talk availability via an app. But if this is allowed, you have to maintain this relationship and social norms of being stuck on an airplane with people. So this idea that your phone can be left on and it's not necessarily a problem if you received a call and something's important. I know I've used one of those airphones in the old days. It's extraordinarily expensive, but it was an emergency and I had to make that call. So if you have the option, I think people will use it sparingly. I don't foresee it becoming like something like the bus, because air travel is relatively expensive. It's not like something that you're going to have just any old guy with a phone just blasting a conversation all day.
Well, you can't pull the chain and ask for the airplane to stop and let you off at the next, you know.
That's the next thing that they're considering proposing to consider. Adding chains to airplanes.
And having sky stops where you can get off.
Ooh.
I want to ask this question just because I think it's worth considering. What is the difference between someone talking on their cell phone on an airplane and someone talking to the person next to them? Because frankly, I get very annoyed at people having other conversations on airplanes because I have the kind of brain that cannot ignore that. I can't help it. I hear everything people say, and it makes it really hard to read. And I'm not talking about the person sitting next to me. I'm talking about the person two or three seats away, right? Two or three rows away. What's different about this? Why should we just outlaw talking on airplanes?
I thought.
You know what, Tom? I am right there with you. I want to just get to the airport and I want to breeze through security because I basically just want to go in a stasis pod and just gas me and then load me up cargo style on the plane with my luggage. And then, when you know, I don't remember anything. And then suddenly I'm in Hawaii and then I, you know, get out of the chamber and I get laid. It's amazing. Like, that's what I want.
That's a great idea.
I think put me in a capsule.
Flowers.
I think the only issue was something about, like, the brain can't comprehend. It doesn't like the idea that it can't hear the other half of the conversation, so you're trying to fill it in, and that's what drives people insane. Because you're like, why are they talking to this other person, and I can't figure it out. But hearing the other conversations, why does that bug you so much, Tom? Because you're like me. You're a curmudgeon, and that's okay.
Shh, it's a plane. Beatmaster's like, don't turn everything into a library, Tom, just because you love books. Maybe that's what I want to do. I don't know.
Library.
Part of me thinks that this should be allowed. And I actually like the way Darren approached it, which is the FCC should rule whether it is technically feasible from the communication standpoint. And the FAA should rule if it's technically feasible from the airplane standpoint. And then the airline should be the one to make the call of whether it's socially allowed or not. I think that's a good way of approaching it. ProXPN is a good way of approaching your security, at least one aspect. It's not the only aspect, but it's one important aspect of your security when you're out and about using Wi-Fi. Especially, it's actually useful in all kinds of cases. But when you are using open Wi-Fi access points, a VPN is a smart thing to do. And ProXPN provides you a 512-bit encryption tunnel by OpenVPN or PPTP. They have software for Windows and Mac. They have the ability to configure it for Linux. You can get an iOS or Android app. In fact, they have a brand new Android app in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. And it's a global VPN. You can choose from several servers around the world. It'll hide your data so sniffers can't sniff it, including your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant messaging, anything you're doing. Pretty much anything you can do on the internet is going to be working through here. And I use it when I'm like at the airport, when I'm waiting for that flight like Darren, and I'm on that Wi-Fi. Make sure that I use a VPN if I'm going to use that stuff. It's risky enough as it is. So go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. Go to proxpn.com/twit. Sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today and for hiding my bits when I'm out and about. All right, Microsoft in talks to buy Shoutcast and maybe save Winamp?
Yeah, so TechCrunch reports that AOL's in talks to sell Winamp and Shoutcast to Microsoft. Now, just this week, AOL announced it's no longer going to support Winamp after December 20th of this year. So TechCrunch found out that Microsoft and AOL are talking about Shoutcast and Winamp. If you're unfamiliar with Shoutcast, it's software for streaming media online. It acts right now as a portal to over 50,000 radio stations. TechCrunch says that AOL is planning to announce the closure of Shoutcast next week. So Microsoft already has Xbox Music, which works on the 360, Windows Phone 8, and a whole bunch of other devices. There's also a report that Deezer, this is an official report, Deezer is coming to the United States in 2014. But there's a rumor that Microsoft might acquire Deezer or could be the U.S. launch partner, so Deezer could be on Microsoft products. Darren, does Microsoft need any of these properties? Don't they have a strong enough music brand with Xbox Music?
I don't know what the Xbox Music numbers are like, but Shoutcast, when you look at their growth curve, it's like, wow, that's like over 9,000% increase over the last 10 years from zero listeners to, what is it now? It's something like 900,000 at peak. That sounds great, except you compare that to something like Pandora, which is at like 35 million, and it's like, I don't know, it's just a drop in the bucket. So I don't know what their Xbox Live numbers are. Which actually seems like a better service. I did try it out for like a hot sec there, and it's just one of those like all you can eat for $10 or whatever. But I feel like it's a different animal, Shoutcast, and it has like a rabid following. And so I'm thankful that someone is stepping up to the plate to keep this relic. You know, I mean, where was somebody to step up to the plate when GeoCities died? These are, you know, These are the artifacts of the old web. I don't know if Microsoft is the best shepherd for this product. I kind of wish that they both Winamp and Shoutcast, which are both proprietary, would just go open source and live on their lives in the happy ether. That's where all good programs should go, you know, when they're end of life. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to make a big difference to the Microsoft.
There's still a 1997 me hidden inside that just has terror at the idea of Microsoft buying Winamp, right? Like,
yes.
No, that can't happen. But I guess if the alternative is Winamp dies, Microsoft buying it is irrelevant. They're not going to keep Winamp around. They're just going to take the technology.
Remember, Winamp actually did die in the early 2000s when 3.0 came out. 2.8 for life. Really whips the llama's ass.
Somebody in the chat room, Taurus, is saying, we have VLC. Who needs Winamp? I mean, Winamp is just one of those like old, like when I was in college, I used it. You'd scan it. You're like, okay, this is great. It was mine. But I don't think Microsoft needs anything close to Winamp. If anything, Shoutcast is a more attractive property just because.
I agree. Totally. Agree.
Well, maybe it's just on the street corner for $100. I mean, maybe it's just like Microsoft's like, oh, yeah, that gets some hits on that website. We'll buy it. It's like, what, $50? Oh, yeah, done.
It was probably bundling. It's like, how do you like a bundle, Microsoft? You have to buy both. You can't possibly.
Hours of service, too. We'll just throw that in.
Yeah, it could.
It's like used IKEA furniture. You just leave it on the sidewalk and it gets taken care of.
I don't think Microsoft needs any of this. They could build this in-house either way, and they have a bigger brand. If they want to partner with Deezer, I think that's smart for Deezer.
Sure.
And it would be good to have an established brand that's been out there around the world. So when they have Xbox One launches everywhere else, they could say, hey, look, Deezer's on the Xbox One. It's available now. It has the music you're used to. That could be good for in general for Microsoft around the world. In the U.S., it might not be that big a deal. Could be good for Deezer if they actually go ahead with this partnership. That's still a rumor. I don't think Microsoft needs AOL's old garbage. It's like, just go away.
Well, if it depends on how much they pay for it. If they buy it for parts and people, maybe. It might make sense at a certain price point. I think you're right, though. Shoutcast is the more interesting of the AOL deal there. And Deezer could make sense. I could totally see Xbox Music being rebranded as Xbox Music and Microsoft saying, wow, we just like super increased our install base by buying Deezer because we're already in the United States. Deezer wanted to move into the United States. They've got a presence elsewhere that we didn't, et cetera, et cetera. So that actually probably of all of these rumors here, and they are all rumors, makes the most sense to me. Tim Berners-Lee is speaking at the Web Index launch. If you're not familiar with the Web Index, it is a release. It's a thing that's released every year that says these are the countries that are doing well with the web. He called the effects of surveillance chilling and insidious. And he said, quote, everybody owes a lot to whistleblowers who have been involved because there is no way we could have become aware of it and had that conversation without the whistleblowers. When our system for checks and balances breaks down, we must protect and respect them. And he didn't name Snowden by name in this quote, but that's who he's talking about. In the Web Index report, the United States and the UK rank third and fourth for human rights development. Sweden's number one, by the way. Norway's number two. The worry, though, is that surveillance, and this is a September to September index, so it doesn't have all the revelations, surveillance will discourage people from using the web to improve communications. Jimmy Wales also spoke here, and he said it's harder to fight censorship in other countries because they just point to what the U.S. is doing and saying, well, why should we change what we're doing? Your country does the same sort of stuff. Darren, in the past, when these sort of things happen, the net routes around them. Right, it's famous for the internet culture being able to route around any problem. Is Tim Berners-Lee right? Is this a problem that is so big that it's going to be difficult to route around?
No, I mean it's when you start talking about the actual technical side of it and the potential innovation that actually all of this awakening has kind of brought up. I think that technically speaking, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there can be anti-surveillance innovation that will win. You know, you put all of the minds of the internet together to create a protocol that isn't susceptible to the kind of stuff that we've seen as of late. Then absolutely, you could bypass nation-state surveillance. And then you get to the question of at what point those governments that are then, they consider the internet like a utility that they're letting into their borders more so than it is like a cloud that happens to pass over that they don't have control over. when do they say, like, yeah, you know what, we're going to fracture this. We're not really letting that in because we don't know what that packet is. So I think that that's going to be the most interesting point where, you know, right now there's like a whole lot of support for like, oh, dude, let's, you know, beef up Tor. Let's use these new protocols. There's all of these cool new messaging applications that use distributed hash tables and other really cool technology to enable, you know, surveillance resistant communication. It's going to come to a pass when, you know, like governments who think that they have a role in the governance of the internet realize that, well, I guess we'll realize when they just turn it off, as some nations do, or filter it out. And so I feel like it's a slippery slope where the surveillance, which is something that's passive, it's not like impeding your ability to browse the web, when it becomes enough of an annoyance that the technology evolves to the point where you're defending against that, then you start seeing censorship, which actually does have like a greater impact.
It definitely seems like it's going to have a chilling effect. People's behavior, if they're paying, like if they know they're being watched, they might use different words when they're writing things. If you're being not tapped, but if you're going to be singled out by a government agency, you want to make sure you're not using their keywords and things like that. Even if you're doing an ingest, it could cause actual behavioral changes that could be a little irritating. But one of the things that's going to happen is that there are going to be other services and things that are supposed to claim they're completely secure. I know that Pogo Plug just came out with a piece of hardware that makes it easy to route everything through Tor. So it's just one piece of hardware versus setting up all your own stuff. So I think we might see a lot more things like that by a lot of companies taking advantage of this surveillance world right now and go, hey, look, you want to get around this, we can go through a bunch of different servers. It doesn't make you impervious to surveillance. It'll just make it difficult to track. But I think it potentially is a market opportunity, unfortunately, because you don't want to deal with this. This is not something, you know, if you're paying attention, you don't want to go through the hassles of cleaning up your language or making sure you're not saying anything in jest. That seems a little ridiculous that you'd have to do that because there's an agency saying, oh, you use that word, so we must watch you.
I got two thoughts on this I want to get in real quickly. And one is, it's not just the government. I've noticed many people, including my wife, saying, oh, I don't want to search for that because I don't want that to show up in my Google Now, right? Android users know what I'm talking about. Like Google Now, you've done a search and all of a sudden Google Now starts saying stuff and you're like, but I didn't really mean that. So there's that aspect of it as well. Like everybody's watching, not just the government. That stuff you can control. You can turn off Google Now, you cannot use it, et cetera, et cetera. Government surveillance is not something you can control. But I think what's happening here is the internet in action, right? In other words, okay, we had to have a whistleblower and a leak to know this was going on. But generally, these sorts of things don't remain secret, at least not forever. And so this is going to happen. And when it happens, what it does is it creates new ways of dealing with it. Reason we have the Onion router and Tor, for as broken as many people may think it is right now, the reason we have it at all is because China put up the Great Firewall and somebody wanted a way to punch through it. And so what do we have now? We have people coming up with new ways to protect against these new types of surveillance. So I'm optimistic. I kind of think that this is all in the internet working in action the way it always has. And I think it will be one of the biggest things it's had to route around, but I think it will.
I feel like, Tom, this is definitely one of those things where you're right. The internet will evolve through this if people get out of the way and let the Internet Engineering Task Force and the Internet Society do their jobs. And speaking to this web index, I'll just put a real quick quote here. Bruce Schneier, he says, the U.S. has proven to be an unethical steward of the internet, and the U.K. is no better. And I feel like as far as an index of friendly governments, I don't really agree with this particular web index. I think that the U.S. has done a horrible job.
The government involvement is only one part of what the web index isn't ranking. Yes. The government is ranking the country. And so there's things like accessibility and affordability and pervasiveness that weigh into the here that have nothing to do with the government. So that's why the UK and the US are ranked as high. And in fact, if you look at the openness, UK and US rank very low on that. They get they bring their average up with other things like accessibility and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's finish up with app.net. Remember app.net? I'm a member of app.net. I got in on the ground floor. It's now actually open. If you didn't know, you don't have to pay for it anymore. What are they up to these days? They're pivoting-ish.
Sort of. They're launching something called Broadcast. It's going to be a universal push notification system that alerts you to things that happen online. So it allows anyone to publish and subscribe to push notification broadcast channels for free. A user only receives a broadcast when they've explicitly subscribed to a broadcast channel. App.net's Dalton Caldwell says, you're not going to see promoted content. You're not going to see some weird algorithms sending you information. This is the stuff you subscribe to only. Broadcast can be composed of a photo, animated GIFs, or GIFs, whatever you want to argue about that one, text, links, geographic information, and a lot more information there. Once someone creates a broadcast channel with app.net, you can share it with the audience by embedding it on your website if you want to, and you can subscribe that way. Anyone who wants to subscribe is going to receive that push notification in real time, and they showed a couple of examples on their blog post. They mentioned public safety messages, or if, let's say, you're an online video guy and you want to let people know you're live streaming, you can have people subscribe to that, and they can get a little push notification. App developers could use it to let their users find out that there's a new version of the app available. Darren, do you think broadcast is going to be a widely used tool online?
I don't know. I mean, you know, this sounds like a Yahoo Pipes to me. This sounds like an if this, then that. And those are great for those people that have that need. I feel like the Twitters and the Facebooks have done a better job of kind of culling that kind of audience because they have those like embedded little widgets on everybody's website. But what tickles me here is just that we're talking about push again. And it was actually 1997 that the cover of Wired magazine was that big hand and it said push, you know, and it's the future. And we are perpetually going to reinvent RSS just as we will blogging and browsers and text editors and window managers. And so this needs to happen because it only gets better, but it's just like, you know, yes, I'm glad they're doing it because they're doing a good job at it. So I hope more people get involved.
I think this is really cool. And there's a lot of baggage around app.net. People are making cracks in the chat room already about like, oh, building a business on a bunch of Apple fans isn't sustainable. Actually, it is sustainable for a lot of software makers, but that's beside the point. I like this service. I think it's smart. I think it's if they can pull off the promise of it, could be incredibly useful. I already signed up for a few things and I'm curious to see how they work. I love the fact that before you sign up for a service, they tell you like you're going to get this many messages per week or per day. In fact, there are a couple of sports team notification services I was about to sign up for, and they said four times a day. I'm like, too much. That's for a bigger fan than me. But there are a couple of things that are like, only once a week? All right. Yeah, I can go for that. I want to see more people involved in this. I want to see it made a little easier or maybe even a little more automatic to take advantage of. But I think it's pretty promising. I like the idea a lot.
I like that Darren mentioned Yahoo Pipes because I used to make things like this with either pipes or IFT or a bunch of right. like filters and boxcar so I could set up these push notifications. So if I got an email to a special address, it would send it to my phone and I'd get a little push notification. I could see a lot of news sites and news organizations using this as a tool because there was breaking news got a lot of users, a lot of interest because they were being pushed via Twitter. You were getting those push notifications. I could see a lot of properties out there going, wait a second, we can have this, and this built the infrastructure for us. I'm actually interested in it as a content producer because I like this idea of, hey, here's a message that I really want you to see. If you're doing something like a Kickstarter project or something, you want an update, something that requires an action, that would be really cool. I don't know how it really ties into app.net's kind of Twitter-ish beginnings, but I think it's definitely an interesting move.
I agree that there are lots of ways to do this. And so I know that you weren't saying it this way, but a lot of people are going to say, yeah, you can do IFT or something like Yahoo Pipes. Why do I need this? There are already other apps out there that do this kind of thing. Why would I need app.net? It's all about who makes it easy and popular and has the most abilities on it. IFT is definitely more capable than anything app.net mm-hmm. will ever be, but not everybody's going to want to go set up things on IFT. Some people will, some people love it, but not everybody, right? So it's a lot easier for a lot of people to look at this kind of app and say like, oh, there's the things I recognize, click, 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 done, right? It's the ease of use. It's that barrier of use, which may not sound like a lot. You can criticize and say, oh, who doesn't have time to set that up? It's not that hard. Doesn't take that much. And we all have so many things to do in a day. Even taking out a couple of steps can accumulate to a lot of save time over the long run.
Agreed.
Agreed. We're all agreed. Motion carried. To the randomizer. Man. Randomizer. Had a straw poll today. And Dr. Mom on our subreddit submitted a story about getting email about STDs, which only got 4% of the vote. I was a little surprised. I was actually a little worried that might win. Thankfully, 51% of the people wanted to talk about Air Force sending 29 satellites into space at once. This is the mini sats, the Cubosats. The ones made by the Thomas Jefferson High School. This is launching on Tuesday, and there's a main satellite that's a normal satellite. It's Space Test Program Satellite 3, but there are 28 CubeSats in there, little nano satellites, about 4 inches on a side, weighing about 3 pounds each. Have you guys heard about this program? It's really cool.
Yeah, this is the stuff where you basically get your own little microsat for like a week until it decays in orbit.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. I love the idea because it's like the democratization of space. Not that we need more junk up there, but if it's only going to stay for a week, that's kind of cool. I don't know how useful that is. I mean, as a school project, that's huge. You know, ham radio people love this. I would love the whole idea of, like, you know, as the privatization of space travel continues, we actually see, you know, the cost per pound reach that sweet spot of maybe, I don't know, $1,000 where you could actually do something effective, community-based. I wonder how much that's going to change the thoughts on jurisdiction of space, if that ever becomes reality. But this is a cool first step, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also a test of the Minotaur rocket for commercial use as well. So a lot of things being done on this mission. Lots of progress. No Sarah today, but we still got a calendar, Iaz.
Sure, I will take this calendar and hopefully fill in for Sarah right now. So starting today, there are unlocked SIM-free iPhone 5Ss in the Apple site. So if you go to the Apple online store, you can get a GSM SIM-free iPhone 5S and pay some pretty pricey prices, $649 for the 16-gigabyte version. Tomorrow, November 23rd, is the Doctor Who 50th anniversary. And also on Saturday, Intel is going to open up its retail experience stores starting in New York's Nolita. Those stores will close on January 25th. So you've got a limited time to go in and experience Intel.
Yeah, and as we found out yesterday, those were supposed to be selling the new Intel OnQ TV system. So if you're wondering, like, why are they doing this? They already had the retail space. They had to do something with it.
Wah, wah.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Well, it's an email from Jared. He says, "Dear TNT crew, I'm writing, yes, a few days late, about the Nintendo educational tablet topic from a few days ago. Although I'm not quite sure how the whole tablet thing is going to work out for them, I just wanted to point out that once upon a time, Nintendo dipped their toes in this market slightly with Mario Teaches Typing. Don't know how valuable this is to you, just thought I'd share." Jared, you were among many people. A lot of people on Twitter were pointing this out, too, that they learned to type from Mario. It is sort of like pointing to the Apple Pippin when you talk about Apple gaming, although much, much more valuable, I think. I think it actually worked a lot better, and a lot of people actually learned to type from it. But yeah, it's not the first time Nintendo has done something educational with its characters.
I take that.
Hey, and let's not forget Mario Paint. That one taught kids how to use a mouse. And it
I
had
forgot
the
about
music
Mario Paint.
Thing.
I actually used Mario Paint. You're right.
Oh, the music editor in it was fantastic. There's actually still some tracks that are pretty fantastic if you YouTube Mario Paint. And there you go, your afternoon. Sorry.
Well, that is it for this. We're going to get to some drawing. It's not painting yet. In a minute with Len Peralta's illustrations. But Darren Kitchen, first of all, thank you. Good to have you back. Always great to get your insights. What's going on in the Hack 5 space?
Huge changes. We completely redid the studio. We're launching 3 new shows, and we've got an episode of behind the scenes of the studio, as well as some cool stuff with the Chromecast. So go and check it out, hak5.org, and stay tuned for all sorts of fun launches this week.
You have been lurking, illustrating, drawing, and getting a lot of good comments today from the chat room. What do you got for us today?
Well, I just want to let you know that all these were done using Mario Paint, so it's kind of tying it all in here. First story, the Xbox One. I'm going to hold off getting Xbox One or a PS4 until I'm absolutely sure which one is the one to get. I'm probably going to go Xbox because I'm just a bigger fan of that, and I get a lot more play. But this is my image in homage to the release date of the Xbox One. Congratulations, Microsoft, on releasing the new Xbox One today. This one was kind of interesting. The Chromecast is wooing developers, is what the story was all about. So this is kind of like a little little image of the Chromecast logo sort of pulling a dev into its...
Why is it a blob?
It's very dangerous, you know? I don't know. There's just something sort of kind of crazy about
it. It wants to subsume them into itself. I get it. All right.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of people talking on airplanes either. I don't think that's really going to work. And I think exactly what's going to happen is this. where people always calling and saying, guess where I'm calling from?
Which is, I'm on a plane.
You'll never guess. Guess where I'm calling from.
Is that you in the back?
That is actually you, Tom.
Oh, really? Now that I look at the shows, I realize, yes, that must be me.
I remember using Winamp when I was just a mere child. And this is an image of the woefully outdated Geezer report. Someone trying to explain to a child what Winamp actually is.
From Geezer to
Geezer. I actually started this one a little bit earlier in the show. I thought this was cool. The chilling, insidious, the big eye watching everybody and surveillance and things like that. And so I kind of took it from a child standpoint, is that, you know, this kid's kind of playing with toys, but meanwhile there's this big eye watching them. Things that we don't even really think about during this whole process. But I thought that was kind of an interesting little image. And finally, I'm going to create my own app, and I'm going to call it Spew. And it's just going to throw everything out there, and then you're just going to have to work it out on your own.
You don't have any control over it. It just gives you
everything. Exactly. It's just called Spew. So
Spew.net.
Look for it. Spew.net. Look for it soon on the Apple App Store and on Android device as well.
Seems like it might be a little stinky there. It looks like.
Yeah, it might be. That's confetti. That's like a side thing.
Those are wavy lines. That always means smelly.
Or spidey sense.
Right.
Well, you can actually go onto straw poll. I just put it into the chat room for the users who are watching live. And choose which one of these images they'd like to see on my online store. So.
And the online store is at peraltartsy.myshopify.com if you want to check it out. All your art. It's up there. Lots of good stuff, including past Tech News Today prints as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Check it out at peraltartsy.myshopify.com or just go check out Len and lenperalta.com as well. Thank you, Len. Thank you, Darren. Thank you, Ayaz. Thank you, Jason. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Gordy Nimis and Silverblade, Cap Kipper, Matt
you,
3, MN7, Tondagosa, Cloud. I'm name them all.
Room in here.
You know what? You want to know these people, go to the subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, because a lot of them submit over there, and you can see what they're submitting, and you can become one of them, and you can vote on it. It helps us pick our stories every day, technewstoday.reddit.com. Twit.tv/bestof, we're getting near the end of the year now. We've been plugging this thing all year. We need your help putting together our Best Of show for that last week of the year. So if there's a particular moment from any show at any time in the year, let us know as much about it as possible. In fact, if you got time codes, Jason will give you a special star in his brain.
I'll give you a Best Of episode if you have time codes. My gift to you.
Twit.tv/bestof is a place to submit that. You can email us, TNT at twit.tv. Give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/technewstoday. And, of course, get our show notes and our podcast links and all the other great stuff at our website, twit.tv/TNT. We'll be back on Monday with Christopher Knoll as our guest. See you then.